Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. It is a Country Music Friday edition of the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers hanging out with Kevin Dunn and Brad Kellner. You can always hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. Kevin Dunn is at KevinDunn01. BK is at Brad Kellner in the Twitterverse. All right, gentlemen, we continue. Sark Week. Actually, it's Friday of Sark Week. You know, next week will probably end up being Sark Week, too, as long as we're talking about Steve Sarkisian putting together his staff. Going to be a lot of excitement surrounding that, and still have yet to hear any concrete news on the defensive coordinator hire, but my man BK is going to fill us in on some of that before we get to some Sark sound, because he is making the rounds of the national radio shows, and he's actually been on Colin Cowherd, he went on Scott Van Pelt, so we'll get into some of that sound a little bit later on too. But BK, you did hint that we may have a name, a new name, added to the defensive coordinator candidate list for Steve Sarkisian's staff.
That's right.
Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, we've had a few names.
You got to give this to
me, man. Oh, no kidding. We've had a few names that we've been talking about throughout the course of the week, including Zach Arnett, who's been the defensive coordinator at Mississippi State. People have been talking about Chris Ash as well, maybe sticking around to continue to be the DC at Texas. Also, Pete Golding, the current Alabama defensive coordinator. We've heard that name thrown around a lot as well. But according to Dennis Dodd, who is a national college football analyst for CBS, he tweeted out and also wrote an article within the last hour saying that Georgia defensive coordinator Dan Lanning has emerged as a favorite to take the same position with Texas. The 34-year-old Lanning interviewed at Texas this week, as did Mississippi State defensive coordinator Zach Arnett. Dennis Dodd is also reporting that Barry Odom interviewed this week as well, which would be very interesting.
Thought that was done,
because
right?
I think last week we all assumed that that was done based off some of the reports we were reading and some of the stuff we were seeing from Odom's social media as well. But Dan Lanning, who has been at Georgia for the last couple of years, 34 years old, he's considered a rising star in the industry. Kirby Smart plucked him from Mike Norvell's Memphis staff following the 2017 season. He's been the defensive coordinator at Georgia for the last couple of years, KD, and apparently he is a potential candidate and someone that Steve Sarkisian has been looking at this week.
I've heard good things about him. No relation to Joel Lanning, the Iowa State player.
Oh, I hope not. I don't want him.
No, there isn't. There's no. Or Jeff, who is a minor league baseball player, but I digress. He's 34, and from people... So I had heard his name when I was asking people about good DCs. A coach told me his name and said he's done a really good job there. Obviously, they've got a ton of talent, but Georgia's problem has not been on defense. And not only talent-wise, but also how they schemed them up. They finished 12th nationally in total defense this year, third in 2019. And he was calling the plays and elevated when Mel Tucker took that job at Colorado. So this would be really big. I'm excited about this one. I'm getting definitely a lot more excited about the assistants. I was trying to slow my roll and think about the experience of watching this my whole life. When you can get too sucked up and too sucked into hires, and you're obviously just going to be fired up about it. But Rod, this is one that at least the guy I talked to, who I really trust and is in the industry, said Lanning is one of those young up and comers, a lot like Arnett. And it also goes to show you, Rod, that Sark really is. It's not only about the networks and the contacts, that he knows a lot of different people, but he's really vetting people and making this a national search.
Yeah, and the original report that I saw, or at least a report that I saw, it has suggested, and I think it was Horns 247, suggested that there was going to be another kind of coaching carousel, if you will, involving Lanning if Pete Golding came to Texas from Bama to become the DC, then Lanning would be one of the favorites to end up taking the Alabama DC job. And then Muschamp could end up, you know, taking the DC job with Georgia. That it would be that kind of carousel. But either way, you can tell he wants to go to the Bama. He wants to go to that Nick Saban tree for his defensive coordinator. I think he favors that. One of the reports from Inside Texas had Pete Golding prior to this news. Now we don't know where things stand, but they had him as the favorite. I think he wants to just kind of bring in as many Saban disciples as he can. And also, I think, just me personally, I believe this may be Steve Sarkisian showing a little bit of respect to Nick Saban and saying, all right, I won't totally pillage your staff. Because Nick Saban has publicly stated, he actually did on the special he had with Belichick, or the HBO special that he had with Belichick. And he talked about how he doesn't like that coaches that leave the staff. He likes that coaches leave the staff and they go get better jobs, but he doesn't like that they, you know, they pillage his staff and they take all, they siphon all of his assistant coaches when they go. He says you should go and kind of build your own staff. That's what he encourages coaches to do. So, you know, Kirby Smart got into some hot water with Nick Saban because he took some coaches. I think he took, end up three coaches that he took there. But Steve Sarkisian is going to take way more than that. And he was there for only a short amount of time. Does show you that he's a well-liked coach among that staff. He was there just a short time, just 2 years and a little bit as an analyst, and he was well-liked enough for guys to jump from Nick Saban's staff to his staff, even though they probably known Nick Saban a whole lot longer and probably could rise just as quick through the industry with Nick Saban as they could with Steve Sarkisian, and they're taking a risk with Steve Sarkisian as well. So, but I think Austin is building Tuscaloosa, and I think they agree, and so do their wives. But but I digress. I do think that may have been just him showing some respect for Nick Saban that, hey, it's an understanding. I won't take everything from you. Yeah, I took the O-line coach, but that was my guy. And then I took Jeff Banks, and then I took Milwee, but I won't take your defensive coordinator because I know for Saban that would probably turn him into public enemy number one. And you got to play that guy in a couple of years. And you know, not that you're afraid of Saban, but, man, you definitely don't want him to consider you to be his arch enemy. Nobody, no former assistants yeah. beat him, and you don't. And I'm sure that they are cordial. You don't want to be arch enemy number one to Nick Saban.
No, you don't, but I don't think it's going to matter too much, right? I assume every former Nick Saban assistant didn't make arch enemies with Nick Saban, but he still finds ways to beat them every single time that they play.
Very true.
I say boo freaking who to Nick Saban. Take all of his assistants. I don't care. Because we know he's going to be fine. He does things that other programs can't do to give him a competitive advantage. So what if you give him the short end of the stick? But I see what you're saying, Rod B. We talked about that a little bit yesterday as well. But it's interesting because it's kind of a source off right now. There are some websites that say Pete Golding is the front runner. Now you have this report that says Dan Lanning is the front runner. Then you have reports like Rod just alluded to that say, well, you know, if Pete Golding comes to Texas, Dan Lanning will go to Alabama to replace Pete Golding. And then there's a report that says, well, if all of that goes down, then maybe Will Muschamp is actually going to get back into coaching after all and become the defensive coordinator at Georgia. So we've got a bunch of dominoes. And whoever Texas hires at DC, KD, is going to create some sort of chain reaction across the college football landscape, especially if it's one of those two guys, Pete Golding or Dan Lanning.
Yeah, it's the opposite of the baseball hire they had years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, to where we're actually spending all that money, and so it's actually gonna trickle down a little bit differently. And the fact that you go spend $1 million a year for Jeff Banks, I think that's the signifier that Texas is really going blank checks. And when you get into that type of arms race, yeah, that's gonna matter. And look, I mean, I hate to go Shaka Smart on this and tell you why the pandemic's been good or why it works for us right now with timing, but there may be some schools, not that Georgia wouldn't try and really pony up some money to keep the guy if they really wanted him, but it's just a different environment right now financially for a lot of people. And Texas is one of the few schools that it doesn't really hit them on stuff like this. Rod, I mean, you know, they're going to be able to separate themselves, as I've talked about, separate yourself from the 13 Saturdays in the fall, and you do that with stuff like this.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I understand exactly what Sark is doing, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, he is just going to try to bring as much of the Nick Saban recipe as he can, and then, you know, kind of bringing in his own style and his own unique blend with it, the things that he's picked up from Pete Carroll, the things he's picked up from great coaches. So we'll see. I mean, everybody's got their own, you know, type of replication, if you will, of the Nick Saban recipe, just like Tom Herman was trying to replicate Urban Meyer, and so was Charlie Strong, and that didn't really work out. So we'll see if the Nick Saban model works out a little bit better.
Yeah, by the way, Dan Lanning, just for those of you curious, Georgia's defense finished 12th nationally in total defense this year. They finished third in total defense in 2019, and Lanning was calling the play. So everybody knows Kirby Smart is the defensive mastermind, right? The former DC for Nick Saban at Alabama. That's how he got the job as the head man at Georgia. But Dan Lanning was calling the plays at Georgia the last couple of years, and two really, really good defenses there. And like you said, KD, defense hasn't been the problem with UGA.
No.
It's been finding a quarterback.
And he may have taken over for Mel Tucker, too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, no. His defense so far has been really good. 34, same age as Arnett, same age as Marcus Freeman. I'm going to get into it in one and done, guys. Just the maybe the most important trait for a head coach, and we're going to find out early from Sark if he has that, or at least somewhat early. And Rod, it seems to be heading that direction. You know, we've talked about you've talked about McVay and the changes he made to go get Staley, and he had a pretty old DC obviously before that, but it does seem like there's just these, all of a sudden people will allow you, and the environment will allow you to take chances on younger people and young progressive innovative minds that you couldn't do back in the day. I think it's healthy for the sport. I think it's why we're seeing so much of the transcendent play.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You're getting that at every level of football, too, this infusion of youth. And there's just a youth movement overall in football. Now, coaches and I think even the owners in the NFL, they're starting to prefer the younger version of something and take a chance on coaches, and not all of them are ready to, you know, and now them are ready to kind of shoulder that burden and deal with that kind of responsibility. But you're willing to take a chance that coach may end up becoming a great coach with not that much experience, because if they have the concepts and they have the really progressive philosophy, they can give you that competitive edge.
KD, can you repeat what you just said so I can repeat it again in a couple
of
minutes? That's all.
Man,
me.
I do that probably more than any of us, so, and you guys don't call me out when I do it, so I just had to have a little Friday fun with you.
I appreciate that. You gotta call me out on that. All right, guys, we'll keep you posted, obviously, if any actual news drops. I mean, it's all rumors at this point, but once again, Dan Lanning, a potential name to keep an eye on for the Texas DC vacancy. Pete Golding still in the mix. Arnett still in the mix as well. And maybe Chris Ash is too. We saw a report, actually a few reports earlier today, that said Chris Ash is going to follow Urban Meyer to Jacksonville. Of course, yesterday, Urban Meyer was officially named the head coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's got a previous working relationship with Chris Ash. We all know about that. But there was a report from Horns 24/7 earlier today that said, no, Chris Ash might stay in Austin if Sark offers him the defensive coordinator job. So I don't think that ship has completely sailed. My guess is, though, just based off the fact that Sark has not given us an announcement with Chris Ash and he keeps interviewing other people, my guess is it's less likely than not that Ash is going to be gone this year.
It's not, but guys, we're going home with a hot chick tonight, okay? We're down to three or four, and I like all the selections. I like the fact that we have something to choose from, okay? And so if Ash is part of that, to go with an Arnett or to go with a Lanning and the type of names we've heard, I think it does signal to us that this thing is being done the right way, and it's being vetted, and it's actually being done from a national perspective. I've kidded around. I love DeLoss. He did a great job here, obviously. But when they went to go hire David McWilliams and he said, we're going to have a national search, and you go get your former player and former DC in Lubbock, that's never gotten out of my head. And I don't feel like Texas has ever really, they've gotten better from that, but they've never really taken it to truly national stuff. And I feel like we're seeing that here, Rod. The last couple of days, man, I've been pretty excited from what I'm seeing from Sark, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, the defensive hire is just going to be really important. I mean, you're going to have Baylor has hired Jeff Grimes, who's one of the best young offensive minds in college football. And I don't know how young he is, but in terms of his coaching experience, I'd say at the highest levels, he hadn't been doing it that long, but he's been really, really successful at BYU. This year had one of probably the top five most explosive offense in the country. It was in Alabama, but it was really, really impressive. And of course, you got Lincoln Riley to deal with. You'll have, you got the air raid coming in here, and you got a lot of different offensive innovations in the Big 12. And Mike Gundy always has an impressive offense too. So Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham at different spots too now calling plays. So, like I said, more of that air raid influence. I just think the defensive hire, make sure you get it right. And I like the candidates they have right now, so I think there's more of a chance that you'd hire the right guy than the wrong guy. But you need to make sure you hire someone that's going to be really, really progressive and somebody that can adjust on the fly, because that's what the Big 12 is. We have a lot of different hybrid spread schemes, and I didn't even mention Matt Campbell, but no. You know, different types of spread schemes, and they will stress a defense. I thought Chris Ashton did a really good job this year, but It's not an easy life for a defensive coordinator. There's sleepless nights in the Big 12 if you're doing your damn job, because you got to watch a lot of film to try to get the advantage and anticipate the adjustment going up against these really, really great offensive minds.
I like all the minds, though, that at least are candidates right now. Should be a good time for Texas fans. You know what should be a good time for you is retirement. It actually should be the best time of your life. That's only going to happen, though, if you make smart decisions with your money. It's been a crazy 2020. It's time to start the new year right and get your retirement planning on track to help you do just that. Michael Reese, president and founder of Centennial Advisors, located right here in Austin, is hosting a two-night in-depth class on retirement planning. It's for 2021, what's going on now, and also beyond. Mike's going to give us five decisions you need to make with your finances so that you can enjoy that feeling of confidence that you're making the right decision for your financial future. I've got tons of questions. I'm sure you do, too. And to get free good advice, that's nice. Two nights. Part one is Tuesday, January 19th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Part two is the following Tuesday, the 26th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. It's a virtual event, absolutely free to attend, no obligation. There's no reason not to check this out. All you have to do is get to retiringwelluniversity.com. Again, that's retiringwelluniversity.com. If you're serious about your financial future and retiring, get to retiringwelluniversity.com to reserve that spot.
All right, guys, I want to play at least one cut of audio from Steve Sarkisian's national media tour over the course of this week. By the way, Sark, your media run is not complete until you come on the triple option with RBKD. So, don't think just because you've done Scott Van Pelt and done Colin Cowherd's show that you've got time to rest. We're going to need you on this show at some point, too. But, guys, we know this job is a pressure cooker. It really is. I mean, hell, this station is, I don't want to say solely dedicated, but we spend a lot of our time dedicated to covering Texas Longhorn football. And you've got all sorts of insider sites. You've got the local TV stations and the Statesman. And there's just so many outlets that cover Longhorn football. And obviously, there are a ton of fans across Longhorn Nation. This is an international fan base, an international brand. This is a very, very big job. And Steve Sarkisian is being tasked with trying to turn Texas football around. Feels like there'd be a lot of pressure with something like that. Well, Colin Cowherd yesterday on his show asked Steve Sarkisian if he feels pressure now that he is the head coach of the Texas Longhorns.
Well, I don't know if I feel pressure. You know, I think, in my opinion, it's you when you take a Texas job, when you take an Alabama, when you take an Ohio State, you take a USC, you have to recognize what the job is. And if you don't, then all of a sudden when things aren't going the way you all want them to go, then you feel the pressure. The reality of it is when you take this job, our job is to win championships. Our job is to year in and year out be in the conversation of the college football playoff. And I can't have my head in the sand and not recognize that. Now, we've got a lot of work to do. There's a lot that goes into this. There's a lot when you start talking about the development of our players on and off the field. But I don't necessarily feel the pressure because I recognize what the job is.
So Rod B. there is Steve Sarkisian yesterday saying he doesn't feel the pressure. He knows what he's walking into. Now, obviously, pressure mounts a little bit if things aren't going well on the field. But what are your takeaways from what you heard from Sark there?
Yeah, I mean, he understands. He's mature enough to understand the expectations. They're going to be huge, and that's good. That means people like Sark, and they like to hire, and they like the assistant coaches, and they think with what Tom Herman left the program, the Longhorns believe they weren't that far away. And I agree with that. I don't think the Longhorn program is that far away from – I'm talking about winning a Big 12 title is kind of the goal that I'm looking at. But I don't think they're that far away. So for Sark to come in here to inherit a ton of talent, to also – you know, bring in a great coaching staff and be given by the boosters and the donors essentially a blank check, all right, to go out there and flex and bring in the big, you know, the big time hires and the big name splash hires from a national search, as KD said. Yeah, the expectations are going to be high. I'm glad he knows that he can win nine, ten games and lose to Oklahoma and lose to Iowa State, Longhorn fans are going to be calling him out. And I'm glad he knows that.
Perfect transition. Yep. Well put, Rod. You are right. I'm glad you're being real about it. Perfect transition, though. Let's continue this talk pretty much, talking about coaches, but also how coaches have changed and what you're looking for from a head coach. Really, there's some different things that they have to be able to do now that wasn't nearly as important as it was 20, 30 years ago.
I like that five-star recruit at Kentucky. He's been here, and he's going to stay here. It's one-and-done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
One-and-done time, we continue to talk about hiring coaches and the new Texas coach, head coach. That would be, of course, Steve Sarkisian. And we've got pretty good experience, guys. And I'm talking to not just my two boys here, but also everyone listening right now. If you're a Texas fan, you've got recent experience, and think about, like, if you've been in a bunch of relationships in 2 years, and it's like, yeah, I know what I'm good at, I know what I'm not good at, I know what I'm looking for, I know what I'm not looking for. And Texas fans, I think one thing we can definitely agree on, some commonalities and similarities between Charlie Strong and Tom Herman and what they did here. What they didn't do right was hiring initial staffs. Right. And we can look at that. And obviously, Tom Herman, I mean, his last year here, he had 7 new assistants. Right. And he didn't know the pandemic was coming, but sometimes life happens. And so tough break there. But Tom Herman, hopefully, even today and definitely down the line, can look and say, here's what I didn't do right. And my hubris and my ego and maybe my lack of just or maybe my naivety that I really felt like the Houston staff could come to the Big 12, the University of Texas, and that we were going to be the type of program that Texas wants to be. And certainly Charlie with Sean Watson, I think, hell, Charlie started with Les Koenig, right, when he came in, and that didn't work out. So he had different coordinators, Vance Bedford, that he had to get rid of, and I'm sure he would look back and say, you know what, now that I've been at Alabama and looking at this, I just did not build that staff well. But here's the caveat, and here's the thing that I really hope Sark has. And I've talked about this not a bunch before, but before on this show, that one of the most important traits for a coach, especially now in 2021, it wasn't nearly as important in 1968. Neither were water breaks, so a lot of things have changed. But is how well do you hire? Like, in terms of being a boss, not only evaluating a potential hire, a defensive coordinator, an offensive coordinator, our receiver coach just left. You know why? Because he got bumped up and he's going to go be the DC at Virginia Tech, right? Whatever that is.
It's a weird transition.
It is a weird transition. But if you actually get your program to the point of we're doing really well, you're going to lose guys, and you're going to have to be able to hire. So whether you're doing well, whether you're not doing well, but if we get to the if he gets this program to the point where he wants it to be and where we all want it to be, you're going to lose guys. Mm-hmm. Do you realize how many assistants Nick Saban has lost in 8 years during this dynasty?
Right.
Now Clemson's been able, BK, to keep them, and they've had the alignment. They lost Jeff Scott to South Florida, but Tony Elliott steps up. Venables has been there forever. Justin Ross, who announced today he's coming back, he was from the state of Alabama and chose Clemson over Alabama, he said, because these coaches have been there for a long time. That is not the norm right now. If you're going to win, and Kirby Smart may be dealing with it right now, you're going to lose guys.
Yeah, no doubt about that, and that's a good thing, right?
I mean,
it works with players and with coaches. You know, it's a good thing if you're losing players after their junior or redshirt sophomore seasons, because that means you're developing the hell out of them and you're turning them into NFL players, which is going to help with recruiting. But same thing goes with coaches, right? I mean, developing coaches, that's a thing. And Nick Saban has done a phenomenal job, whether it's the coaching car wash, as Rod Babers calls it, where it's, you know, guys who have been coaches in the past, but things didn't work out at previous stops, so they go to Bama to get sort of a second chance, or they're up-and-coming type of guys like a Pete Golding, who was at UTSA before getting the job at Alabama. He does a phenomenal job with that, and that's what you want. You know what they say, KD? I mean, A's hire A's, B's hire C's, C's hire D's nuts. That's the statement right there. So you want, hopefully you hired an A with Steve Sarkisian, and hopefully he hires a bunch of A's, which ultimately get better job offers, and then Sark can hopefully replace him with really, really good assistant coaches.
So, Rod, BK just kind of touched on something that I also wanted to get to within this one and done, and I've laughed about it with a couple coaches that if you really are confident and secure in what you bring to the table with your brain, with your football brain, you're going to want to hire people that may be better at you in certain things. And that and I'm certainly not saying that with Charlie or Herman. I don't know. But I don't know if that was just not knowing these guys are good enough coaches and that they've got the clout upstairs to actually be able to work in this, in this new football world. But you got to make sure that you're secure enough to go out there and say, I want to go hire someone who may be smarter than me at something else.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately the best coaches are the ones who have kind of the best coaching trees are willing to go out there and hire the guys whose strengths may be their weaknesses,
yep,
right?
Yep.
You know, and that's part of being honest with yourself as a coach and a person, that if you realize, okay, there are some things I just don't do well, I will always try to improve on those things. I will work very hard at getting better at those things. But once you are the head of an organization and you have been honest with yourself and had that man in the mirror moment to know, okay, well, I'm not good at this. I'm not good at this. I need to hire somebody who's really good at those things, which I am weakest at. And a lot of coaches don't have that humility. They don't have that honest evaluation and that introspection to be able to make those types of hires. Yeah, there are certain things you do really well. You don't need to go out there and hire a lot of coaches like you.
No.
That's stupid.
Yes.
Hiring a lot of coaches like you, that's dumb. If you, and actually Robert Saleh, I heard him say this at a coaching clinic thing that I was watching earlier this week. He said, if I ask any of you coaches out there to describe give me the traits of the best coach, you're going to end up describing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
All coaches do it. Once he said, if I tell you describe describe a great coach, you're going to describe yourself ultimately. But if you realize that's a bad way to build a staff, it's just to hire a bunch of guys like you that think like you, that look like you. You actually do need that versatility, and you do need that melting pot, if you will, of ideas that ultimately will give you the advantage. But some coaches, yeah, they never see it that way.
They never see it that way. It's that self-reflection, humility, as you said, and introspection, where you can understand what you do well and what you don't do well. I think Rod, you've even mentioned it in relationships. You get older and you may go out with someone and you're like, oh man, she's really good at that and I'm not good at that. And all of a sudden that's a real attractive thing to you. It's a good fit because you understand what your weaknesses are. And so I get the feeling that Sark, his third go around as a head coach, and he's been around and he's seen just a lot of different things at different stops, that he probably understands what he does well and what he's looking for in assistance. But it's not going to stop here. I mean, if he does this well, and this is better than what Tom Herman and Charlie Strong, the initial staff they built, which really started to destroy this thing before it ever really got started, and there were other obstacles that were in the way, and we had to get this right, and you didn't, then he's going to have to rehire again. And Kirby Smart may be dealing with that right now. He lost Mel Tucker to Colorado, who's now at Michigan State because they were doing well. And he may lose Lanning, which would look like Dan Lanning, maybe a lateral move. But BK, I mean, he's had this thing rolling, and that's the biggest question that probably Dave Paul and Georgia fans still have about Kirby Smart, because it's early on. It's one of these things. You don't really know how good they are. It's got to take time. Like, now we can look at Nick Saban and say he's good at that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. And hopefully third time's a charm for Steve Sarkisian. I mean, he did good things at Washington. He took over a program that went 0-12 the year before he got there, and he turned them into a perennial bowl team, and obviously did well enough to get the job at USC. We know how things kind of fell apart there. But, yeah, hopefully Sark has kind of learned from some of the mistakes that he made in the past. And I think part of filling out this initial coaching staff is naming himself the play caller,
yep,
for this offense, because Sark said it to Brian Davis of the Austin American-Statesman earlier this week that was his biggest regret, or at least one of his biggest regrets during his time at USC, is that he hired someone else to call the plays. And we've seen it the last couple of years at Bama. Now, this guy is a pretty damn good play caller, and that's a good thing, right? That's part of filling out your staff, is knowing that, okay, I am the best person for this job that I can bring in. So hopefully that is one of the many things that Sark has learned over the first couple of stops he's had as a head coach.
Yeah, Saban, in the 14 years there, he's had just a bunch of guys. I mean, Sark, you think about some of the guys that have left to go take other jobs. Obviously, Jeremy Pruitt. We mentioned Kirby there earlier, Mike Locksley, Lane Kiffin, Jim McElwain. There are a lot of guys, and the reason that they're leaving to go take other jobs is because they've obviously done well there. But the fact that he's been able to keep that going and keep that train going, to me, that may be the most impressive thing about the GOAT, who is Nick Saban, the fact that he's been able to keep it going on and on and on. So, however he looks at coaches and evaluates coaches, that's also changed over time, and he's talked about that. He didn't hire as well as he does now at Michigan State, at LSU, or at Miami, that he is really, you know, and he's still been able to stay open-minded and stay as nimble as water with moving different directions. And when we saw that, the type of offensive coordinator he's looking to hire right now was not the type of guy he was hiring with Greg McElroy. So I'm pretty excited from the names we've seen with Sark, but the reality is that this is probably the most important time for Texas that Sark's going to have. It's going to be his initial staff. It's going to be the most important time he has, maybe his first year at Texas. But we're not going to really find out, Rod. We're not going to find out how good the hires are for a little while. So at this point, you just got to have some faith.
Yeah, I mean, I think certain things you should be able to see improvement on, right, early on. And I think most of that will be Sark in the play calling, as BK mentioned. It'll just be that direct dimension where you can see him scheming guys open. You can see him using compressed formations and using stack formations and bunch formations and funk and the pre-snap motions and shifts and those, you know, the RPO game, which he loves so much. You'll be able to see that instantly. But in terms of developing the talent, which is what the coaching staff really is, that's the nitty-gritty of it. That's the deep dive. That's what they're going to have to do to really change the trajectory of this program and get it back on the championship track, develop those blue chip recruits they're getting. We won't see that for a couple of years. We won't be able to see that, but we should be able to see the schematic advantage instantly. And if we can't see the schematic advantage instantly that Sark is supposed to bring to the table, I'll have a lot of questions. Yeah. I'll have a lot of questions.
It would make sense, but, you know, it can't happen, right? I mean, we thought Tom Herman obviously was going to bring an elite offense here, and that never materialized.
Yeah.
So it seems crazy to think that Sark's not going to do the stuff he did that worked so well at Alabama and led him to coordinate the most efficient offense in college football history, but sometimes it doesn't always go from place to place.
No, it doesn't. Now, that, though, that would surprise me, and I'm going to put my money on the offense's move here, whether Sark works here or not, and there's obviously a chance that he doesn't, but the biggest question I do have is just how good of a hirer is he, mm-hmm. and evaluator of coaches, and then being able to maybe not only retain those guys, but once they do well and they want to move up just like Sark did, can you go replace them? Nick Saban, he's had 16 of his former assistants that later went on to be head coaches.
Includes
nine head coaches, nine current FBS. I know, even then that sounds like a low number. But he just won the national championship. Alabama's as good as they've ever been, as brilliant as he is, as fastidious as he is, as regimented as he is, with all the things that go on in that program. The best trait he has that still works in 21, he hires well, and he coaches him well. And I think Saban, here's the other thing to go with, does Sark really hire well? The other thing, too, is how much do you know about other positions? Can you walk in to the DB room and know if that guy's coaching well? And that's just, Rod, that's seeing a lot of different stops. That, to me, from people that know Saban, that is what he's really good at. He has continued to learn, and stuff he wouldn't have known 10 years ago, he all of a sudden kind of knows what a good tight ends coach looks like technically.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's one thing that it will also, I think, help them tremendously. He's just had experience. Yes, he has. I don't know if you say failed, but he had obviously a life crisis of sorts, and he didn't meet expectations at USC. And, you know, he's had experience at Washington as a head coach. And I do think a lot of the connections he's made is helping him build the coaching staff. But like you said, he's seen a lot more football than Tom Herman as a head coach. Same thing with Charlie Strong. that experience, that wisdom can just it can only help him make better decisions than they did. Hopefully help him avoid some of the pitfalls that both Charlie and Tom Herman both seem to fall victim to, and they couldn't avoid it. And best way to avoid that is to learn from history, most recent history on the 40 acres.
Yep.
Good stuff. One and done. Talking Steve Sarkisian, and one of the things he has to get right as he transitions to this Texas job.
I'm not kidding. That may be the number one trait you're looking for. Now, assuming you've got some of the other basic things that you can run a program with, that trait separates the Urban Meyers and Nick Sabans more than other traits that people may think.
Agreed. That's well said. One and done here on the Triple Option with RBKD. We'll take your thoughts. 337-3776 is the Specs text line. We've got Off the Record coming up. The Pandy. Good old Pandy. We've spent a lot of time at home over the last year. We've watched a lot of TV over the last year. We've got a list of the top 10 most streamed television programs since the start of the pandemic. We'll give it to you next.
DD Mega Doodoo. I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get the rain and comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East. Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD, and it's time for another edition of Off the Record, and this one's about the average American viewing habits these days. It comes from Variety Magazine, and it gives us the most streamed programs and on what platforms they were streamed on in 2020. And this is not going to come as a shock to anyone, but this is partly why I have this show as top three greatest sitcoms of all time in that conversation. Last year, Americans cumulatively streamed more than 57 billion minutes of The Office, the comedy favorite that originally aired for 9 seasons on NBC on Netflix is where they streamed it. According to Nielsen's figures that were released last week, the next biggest show was past seasons of Grey's Anatomy, apparently. Mm. Also on Netflix, with an estimated 39.4 billion minutes.
I think it may be million, Rod.
Sorry, I had to play the Netflix sound effect for
billion.
You.
Are you seeing billion? Okay, I'm seeing nearest million. So
now it says billion here.
Damn, that's crazy.
Billion minutes. Yeah, indeed, Netflix had a lock on the top 10 most viewed licensed TV shows per Nielsen, with past seasons of Criminal Minds, NCIS, Schitt's Creek, Supernatural, Shameless, New Girl, The Blacklist. Schitt's Creek is actually a really good show.
Easy.
And
yeah.
Vampire Diaries.
So you've told me about Schitt's Creek. You like that coming in at number 5, right?
Yeah, it's a good show. Schitt's Creek is actually a decent show. It's not on the level of The Office or Seinfeld. No, it's not even close to those.
Okay.
But it's a decent show. It said, as for streaming series, the Nielsen track, Netflix unsurprisingly claimed 9 of the top 10 spots, with Ozark in first place, followed by Lucifer, The Crown, and Tiger King. At number 5 is the only non-Netflix series, The Mandalorian, which I've also watched, which is then followed by Netflix, The Umbrella Academy, The Great British Baking Show, Boss Baby, Back in Business,
what?
Longmire, and You.
What is Boss Baby? Recommend. What is Boss Baby Back in Business?
Boss Baby Back in Business.
What is
yeah,
that?
I don't know.
Like a talking baby? They put a baby in a suit and he starts like calling the shots somewhere? What the hell is that?
Dude, I have no idea. So how many of these shows are you guys actually watching? Are you a part of this? The Office, I know I'm guilty of watching The Office essentially on a loop on Netflix, and I miss it in 2020 because it's no longer available on Netflix now. Now it's on Peacock.
Boss, I'm looking it up. Boss Baby Back in Business is a cartoon.
Ooh.
Oh, there you go.
Like a kid show?
I mean, yes, it looks like a kid show.
Okay.
I mean, I did say cartoon, so that's technically a kid show, but I guess not.
Well, no,
anymore.
They got adult cartoons. Yeah, they got tons of adult cartoons.
Yeah, I know. They use the A word loosely there, but
keep
they
in
do.
Mind,
have,
yeah. Chad Hastings works here, so
I know.
Anything's possible.
Working with you all now.
South Park is definitely an adult cartoon.
No, you're right. South Park is, and there are some funny ones. You could say The Simpsons, Family Guy, a lot of those are. Rod, to answer your question, I mean, obviously, I know of Grey's Anatomy, Criminal Minds, NCIS. I like how they didn't name one of the 29 NCIS that they have.
Oh, so they're lumping them in together?
Yeah, they're just lumping them all
That's going to help.
All in together.
Yeah.
I've had people like you and a couple other people that we've got like minds on stuff like this, and they told me Schitt's Creek is good, although BK told me he tried it and wasn't a big fan. To be honest, of the 10, the only one that I've seen is The Office, and it's in my top three of all time, too.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I didn't watch that much Office this past year. I mean, I've seen just about every episode there is, but I didn't really go back during the pandemic to watch. I'm not a guy who rewatches series that often.
I am.
Right? Like, it takes a lot for me to finish an entire series. I think I've watched, like, four TV series ever from start to finish. It's a big commitment for me right there. And even shows that I really like Seinfeld, right? I watched it. I started it and finished it during the pandemic. I, you know, if it's on TV, I'll watch it if it's on, but like I haven't found myself going out of my way to go back and watch old Seinfelds. Not because I don't think it's funny at all. I love the show, but it's like, I've already seen it.
You already did it.
Yeah. You know, not really worth my time. My time is valuable, guys. I gotta watch Elon versus College of Charleston play basketball on a Tuesday night. Okay,
you got South Korean football
money on it.
Or baseball?
Because he's got money on it.
Exactly, Rod.
Yeah, well, if I could put money on Seinfeld, I would. But you know,
I think Rod, I'll let you speak for yourself. But I get the sense just from knowing you that we're probably more the guys that will rewatch stuff, and because we also can't delete stuff, right? We're always thinking, well, I may need this at some point.
Nope, that's exactly right. And I most of these shows are kind of cheesy. Obviously, The Office is in a different rarefied air, but the rest of these shows, like Criminal Minds and NCIS, Schitt's Creek, like I said, it's a decent comedy. It's not Seinfeld or and honestly, like Curb Your Enthusiasm, or that's another one. And you like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, BK, which is also coming up with a new one. But yeah, it's not like The Office. I would say Shameless is pretty decent, though.
Shameless
is
what's
not
that?
Bad. It comes on Showtime. William H. Macy. It's not bad, man. Shameless is pretty good. If you ever randomly get into it, it's got like, I think it's on 8 seasons or something like that. Man. That's a good show. Shameless is a decent show.
Katie, okay. Have you seen episodes of any of these shows? Like, forget watching from start to finish, but like, have you even seen any episodes of the rest of this list besides The Office?
I've never seen 2 minutes of any of this stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I'm kind of that way with a lot of them. Like, I've seen some New Girl, I've seen some Schitt's Creek, but I've never seen Grey's Anatomy. Like, no. That show's been on forever, and every woman
seconds.
I've ever talked to loves that show.
Yeah, they're obviously doing something right. I'm not saying it's a bad show, I just never checked it out.
And then Nikiss, is that how it's pronounced?
NCIS.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of those. But no, it's in 400 different cities. I've been to a lot of the cities that NCIS has been to, but I've never watched it. I've never seen it happen.
That's the whole thing. So with NCIS and CSI and those, when you've got all of a sudden, like when they're like, hey, we got a new one opening in Little Rock now, that's like literally the next city population-wise that we had to get to. You know the show's doing really well. But also, where do you even start there? Like, should I start with the New York version, the LA version, and then get to Little Rock?
I'd go Cedar Park first, NCIS Cedar Park.
Okay.
I think they're doing a Butte, Kyle one.
Well, it is Williamson County, so.
That's true. That is true. Ozark, I've seen. Ozark is the number one original series.
I hear a lot of good stuff about that.
Overrated, but
Ozark's a good show.
Worth your watch.
Are you guys into the Vampire Diaries? I know I'm an old man, and I'm a fuddy-duddy, and I don't let, you know, I've been told this before by friends and girlfriends that just suspend reality for a little while. Can't we just enjoy something for 2 hours? And the vampire, I just can't get into that stuff. I can't.
Yeah, I think I watched True Blood back in the day on HBO, and that was a vampire show. That's the only time I got into something kind of like vampires. But Game of Thrones had almost everything in it. It had dragons and wizards and all kind of stuff. So, yeah, it all depends on how often you can suspend disbelief.
Man,
dragons, I can't do it.
I took a a vampire class in college at UT.
What?
I mean, you slept?
I think it was Rhetoric of Vampires.
Are you serious?
I mean, I probably went 8 times over the course of the full semester.
That's a lot for you.
The whole class was literally just about vampires and their history and like how they were represented in TV shows and movies over the years and like real life vampires and stuff. It was pretty bizarre. My friends who were in the class learned a lot.
Okay, yeah. They don't exist, but yeah.
They're real, dude.
Okay.
Go back, look at history, man. I mean, they're real people, but they were just like eating people. and feasting on their blood. It's a real concept.
All right. Well, that's a little different. Mm. You don't get the vampire, the good
qualities. Well, they didn't keep diaries. That might be the difference there, I guess.
And lots of people, though, this is how they're watching stuff, guys.
Yeah.
Spending their time.
Streaming, man. I mean, there's not much else to do these days, you know, and obviously a lot of places across the country are way more locked down than we are here in Texas. So really not a lot to do, but there you go. The Office, the most streamed show during the 2020 calendar year by a long, long shot.
Yep. And so number of episodes, they said 192 for The Office that are available. Grey's Anatomy has 366. NCIS has 353. Like 2, 3, and 4 have at least double the number of episodes available, and The Office is still killing them with that. That means people are rewatching stuff. I like that.
No doubt. No doubt about that. Never gets old. It is the triple option with RBKD. We'll take your thoughts, 337-3776. Did y'all watch any of those shows? What were your most watched shows during 2020? Hey, maybe you're still watching them right now. There's Off the Record on the triple option with RBKD. Let's get back into some Longhorn football. The leading rusher for Texas from the 2019 season has put his name in the transfer portal. Plus, the latest on coaching staff rumors, including a name you might need to know as the potential defensive coordinator for Steve Sarkisian. Up next.